happening, everybody? Welcome back to the Anunnaribe Hour, episode 2, with your host, the Paranormies. I'm Johnny Monoxide. This week, we've got Hazard, Grayfield Stray, and Adam Haight once again. What's up, guys?
Hey, it's pretty good.
All right, so how was everybody's week? Everything cool?
Well, Grayfield, I think you just about saw a ghost, didn't you?
Something like that. We had a drug-addled madman attack a member of my staff. She was wounded, but she is okay. It was a bit scary, I have to be said.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm kidding. There was a crazy person tried to kill somebody at your job?
Yeah, basically I was doing some overtime in our warehouse. I was chatting to the, I was sort of standing off to the side and creeping on the girl on the front desk because, you know, she's got a nice bum. And and anyway, so this guy walks in, he's clearly not with it. So my immediate thing is I just quickly call security and say, you know, watch out. He then basically slumps himself onto the desk, doesn't say anything for a while, then starts screaming in her face, then leapt over the counter and basically just started attacking her with a knife he had in his coat. It was fucked up as all hell. And the worst part was I managed to get him off of her. And I mean, she'd already been sort of cut a few times by this point, but I managed to sort of hold him on. And now I'm not a small guy. I'm pretty strong. But this guy was a real struggle to hold down. He was about half my size. I don't know what he was on, but he was fucking strong.
That's great. Yeah. Well, what, you don't know what he was on?
Well, I haven't got a clue.
It sounds like meth or PCP, to be honest.
Sounds a little skinny guy sounds like PCP. Wow, drugs are bad.
Yeah. Never do them, and none of us have ever done drugs, and we're telling the truth about that.
Yeah, no, that's for real.
Yes, take a sip of beer.
That's not drugs. That's not drugs.
It's a drug.
Unless the ancient Egyptians had drugs, then, you know.
Well, anyway, let me tell you, I've been drinking some spirits in the meantime, so.
Are they spooky spirits?
Back on to some spoopy topics.
Nice. All right, so Hazard, how was your week?
Pretty good, man. You know, like I said, I'm working down on Galveston Island these days. Like I said last episode, it's pretty fucking haunted, and within the span of the same day, I got fucking third-degree burns, I got falsely accused of groping somebody, and then there was a freak storm, and my car's electrical system started fucking up and flickering. It's fucking spooky as shit. I took a video I sent to Johnny, and it was creepy as fuck.
I had an old Volkswagen used to do that. Every now and then, just all the dash would just stop. The lights would go out, the dash would stop, and scare the shit out of you. You'd be driving home 10 o'clock at night and for no reason. You have no headlights, you have no dashboard lights. Car's still going, though.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where, you know, that sort of shit happens. You've got the weird fluctuations, the weird flickers, and instantly you're in your head. You don't ever voice that loud, but in your head, you're just like, I've seen enough fucking horror movies. I'm about to fucking die.
And this is where I die. Yep.
Yeah. See, this is why I'm glad that I'm a pedestrian. I don't drive, so, you know, I just got...
Another night, we had a storm at my job, and it was great. So we start having weird electrical fluctuations as we're breaking everything down, closing, you know. My boss is commenting on how spooky it is, and we still have one of the servers in who's black, and I just look at him and I go, it's all right, boss. If anything happens, he's going to be the first to die because he's black, and we'll have a chance for fun.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that is every horror movie's plot. Like, they'd make jokes about it in that scary movie. Like, oh, hell no. You know, like,
well, it's funny you mentioned the electrical storms knocking out power. We had one over London, and it literally put out the East End recently for a good couple hours. Yeah.
So it got even darker in London.
Well, yeah, you know, it got dark, not brown.
Brown's not a light color.
No, brown. Yeah.
Oh, so how was my week? Oh, my week was great.
Sorry, did we not ask?
No.
Only, you know, we really care. Please share.
No, actually, nothing really really, of the paranormal happened to me all week. It was great. I don't like it when it happens like that. Like, I mean, as cool as the story is to tell later, going through it, not one of my favorite things. So
I had this really creepy moment myself. Hazard sent me a GIF, and I woke up covered in ectoplasm. It was suddenly worse every
what
time.
What kind of gift was it?
Yeah. Was it a gift or was it the gift?
It was the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Wow. Sounds like everybody had a much more interesting week than me. Actually, Adam, I don't know. Did anything happen to you this week?
Nah, I've just been working. You know, I guess the only spooky thing is my experiments haven't been a total failure. So I don't know what's going on with that.
Nice. So did you... it's reanimated?
Yeah, is it alive?
Is it alive?
Oh, I don't know how much I'm allowed to tell you.
Okay, never mind. We'll talk about it off the air. All right, cool. So, yeah, good week was had by all except for Gray, who had to hold off a crocodile-infested weirdo at work today. So what are we going to talk about today, guys? What do you think?
Well, I like the Bohemian Grove. We should talk about that.
We should talk about the Bohemian Grove?
I think we should talk about the Bohemian Grove.
I think the Bohemian Grove is a good thing. What do you think there, Hazard?
I think it sounds kind of fucking spoopy.
So does everybody know what the Bohemian Grove is, or are we just all talking shit to each other real quick?
Why don't you fill us in?
I'll fill you in. The Bohemian Grove is a large section of forest up in Northern California where they're amongst the ancient redwoods. There's a camp. And it's a camp for very, very well-to-do people. There's bankers and there's politicians, artists, especially musicians, business leaders, U.S. presidents, media executives, basically just people of power.
I think you could say the most influential people in the world attend that little summer camp.
And Jeb Bush.
Nice. The most influential people in the West, and Jeb Bush.
Good point.
Yeah, you know they have it is a camp though. It's not like a business retreat or anything. They have a motto. It's weaving spiders come not here, meaning like outside concerns, business deals, whatever. Leave that shit at home. This is the Grove. We're not here to hand out business cards. So
pretty much what I've heard is actually inside of the Grove, people will sometimes step aside and talk business for a minute or two, but there's no large scale discussions. If you want to have a discussion with a partner, you're okay to do that, but don't drag other people into it.
Right. I don't think that they're, I'm not saying that's not frowned upon, but that's like, you know, it's pretty much, it's a secret thing to begin with. And I think that if there is business dealings, they are done in private, one-to-one, and it's not, you know, a huge, like, it's not a think tank, per se. I don't know. I'm pretty sure certain things have been conjured up at the Grove. I mean, you have banks brought together with world leaders, with media executives, and I mean, you know, I don't have any proof of this, but I don't think there's any possible way that big decisions, world decisions, aren't being made there.
Oh, put the pie chart aside. We're trying to sacrifice children here.
Right. Right. That's the thing. It's known for its kind of occultic sort of history. It was formed as the Bohemian Club in the early 70s by some actors.
1870s.
What's that?
The 1870s, to be specific, not the 1970s.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you're right. No, it was the 1870s. I'm sorry. Did I say the early 70s?
You did say the early 70s. I mean, imagine for you at like 104 it would be, but you know, it's
100,
it's
120
for us.
Years ago. Yeah, exactly.
When the world was in black and white, dinosaurs roamed the earth.
I know, all the TVs were in black and white, the dinosaurs were running around. It was horrible.
You didn't have to deal with colored people at the same fountain. That does seem kind of better.
I'm sold.
120 bohemians in the woods up in Marin County, you know. but it was basically originally it started off as a retreat for artists. Yeah. And, you know, it was a lot of booze, there was a lot of partying, there was a lot of men, there was literally no women.
Just men.
It was just men. It's always been just men.
And I mean, it's basically, you know, like a manor boon out there.
Sounds very alt-right.
And it's one of those things where if you think about it, you can kind of see the history of esotericism and occultism right there from the beginning, because these were the people that were the rebels, the artists, the poets, the outcasts of society, which back then, you know, heavily predominantly Christian society. So what do you think the outcasts and the rebels are going to get up to if they get out into the woods and get drunk?
Lots of shenanigans.
And, you know, I think one of the most remarkable things that makes it so obvious that their occult interests is the cremation of care ceremony that they kick off the camp with.
Yeah.
Yes. That is.
Why don't you explain to us what the cremation of care is, just for our listeners? Not because I haven't done any reading or anything like that.
Yes, indeed. This is a well-researched show, and we would take high offense to any implication? What's the word I'm thinking of? Accusation.
Accusation.
Implication. Either way, that we do not prep or are unprofessional. So, you know. You'll be hearing from my lawyer, Moisha.
Basically, what the Brit Brian is trying to say is this isn't just shitposting. We did our research, motherfuckers.
So, every year, they kick off the camp with a big ceremony called the Cremation of Care. And if you go on YouTube... So, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening have heard of Alex Jones. Anybody who's at all and yes. You know, involved in conspiracy theories or, you know, likes to read about that sort of thing knows who Alex Jones is. He's a good guy. Now, he was able to infiltrate the Bohemian Grove during their cremation of care ceremony with a little camera, and he was able to record what was going on. And the footage is not great, but you can go on YouTube, you can look up cremation of care, you'll find a stabilized version, so it's pretty shitty, it's blurry, but you can see what happens there. So and
what happens exactly?
Well, it's you've got a whole bunch of people in robes. It really is just a big occult ritual. What probably stands out the most to any viewer would be the enormous owl statue that they make a sacrificial fire to.
And yeah, and the owl represents who?
Moloch.
Moloch. There we go.
Oh, there's that name again.
So, the owl represents Moloch.
For the record, I am not bleeding this time.
Oh, thank Keck.
I actually did get cut earlier. Did probably you? Not related to Moloch.
Probably
yeah.
Not related to, no, were you cutting something?
But you can't be sure.
Right.
That's true, yeah. I can't be sure. It might have been the glass vial I cut my hand on, but it also might have been Moloch.
Well, we can't just blame everything on Moloch. It's not the Jews.
Right. So the Moloch, there's Moloch. There's a giant owl. It's, what, 30 feet tall?
40.
Is it 40?
Yep.
Okay, so
I think it's 40 feet tall.
Is it 40 feet tall?
It's okay. A big fuck-off owl. Does it really matter the specifics of it?
30, 40 feet tall. It's a big fucking statue of an owl. And they sacrifice an effigy of a human to it, and therefore exercising the demons exercising the demon to ensure the success of the camp, basically.
More and specifically, especially given the deity that this is a ceremony to, it is an effigy of a human child.
Okay.
Right.
Wow, okay. I just always read that it was just a sacrifice of human. I didn't know that it was an actual human child. Oh, that makes...
An effigy of a human child.
Right, an effigy of a human child. That makes it worse, sacrificing children. All right, so here we have a bunch of rich, famous artists, world leaders, going into the woods and conducting occult ceremonies and sacrificing a child to an owl god.
And I'd like to mention that the name of the ceremony is the Cremation of Cares. And cares in this context, cremation of cares, cremation of care. The purpose of it is to burn away their conscience, their cares, the things that these worldly stressors that are basically inhibiting them. And a lot of it is related to work, you know. Like you said, they're trying to ensure the success of the camp, and part of the camp was for these, you know, highly stressed people to have a chance to relax and enjoy themselves for a couple of weeks.
Can they just have a bath?
I know, you know, when I decide that I need to get rid of my stresses, I enact the ritual sacrifice of a child. Enact.
Well, I mean, to be fair, these are people who run countries, run billion-dollar corporations, and are cocaine-addled bass players from hippie bands. But, you know, hey.
So two baths, then.
Right, so two baths.
Yeah.
Well, you'll never get the stink of patchouli oil off, so, you know. You
right, that's well, that's implying Phil Lesh is there every time. Come on. now, here's a story, speaking of the Bohemian Grove and Phil Lesh. Those people who know me know that I live in Northern California. I live about 45 minutes to an hour away from the Bohemian Grove.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, it's literally, it's over a bridge and up about, and the bridge is 10 minutes from my house, so 15 minutes, and then about an hour. It's about an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes.
So you're telling us that it's over a river and through the woods?
It's literally over a river and through the woods, and Grandma's house is not where we're going. So we're going to see Satan or somebody else. No, it's an hour and 20 minutes from my house, and they have a state park right near it where people can go and see the giant redwoods and take your kids, you know, to see these huge trees that are, you know, 60 feet in circumference, you know, 20 feet in diameter. You can, like, they have the ones that have they have a tunnel hollowed out in them so they can drive through them. You know, those.
You know what? I'm just going to be frank. I'm not taking children to a national park that sits right next to the site of occult rituals where they sacrifice children in effigy. They might decide, you know, well, this was a particularly stressful year. Let's do it for fucking real this time.
Right. Well, you know what, though, Hazard? Here's the best part about it. Thousands and thousands of people do that because literally nobody knows about the Bohemian Grove.
Well,
It's not something that is common knowledge. Like, if you asked the average person walking down the street, if you said, do you know what the Bohemian Grove is in Northern California, they would look at you like you had three heads. You would think that you wouldn't be able to take kids. But, like, that's the thing. It's a secret camp that people around here know about it because there's high school kids that work there. They hire kids there every year to do, to serve food. They hire kids there to clean the cabins. They hire kids there to clean the bathrooms. So
they do a valet.
They do the valet. Isn't the valet.
There
okay,
some
so yes.
Weird so, policy there where any females inside of the camp have to be like outside of the grounds before nightfall.
Yes.
Yeah, it's literally no girls allowed. Yeah.
They changed that state hiring laws. They changed that a while back to where. Females were allowed to be hired, but they're only allowed to do certain jobs. They can't. I believe it was a lawsuit in like 1978 that their employment practices were judged discriminatory, so they had to start hiring women back in the late 70s.
But they have to be out
women's
before nightfall.
Yes, right. Women's job descriptions were limited to the valet parking and the dining circle. Other than that, was like all men. So the lucrative
jobs. Are the spouses of guests allowed to come in?
No, there are no females allowed other than the employees that work there. It's literally, this place is in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of nowhere. It is literally a humongous redwood forest that's untouchable because it's in the middle of a national park that has a state park inside of it.
See, it's insane because we
sounds like occult rituals where they don't want any feminine elements present due to occult reasons or just some sort of standard fuck party.
Well, it's insane because
hold on one at a time, guys. One time, Gray.
Okay. Go ahead, Gray.
Okay, so it's insane because, I mean, you have to remember, as a guy who's a native of Britain, we don't have redwood trees over here. But I've seen images of them, and they look absolutely fucking huge. So the idea of an entire grove just full of them, it must be an absolutely immensely large place.
It's hundreds of thousands of square acres, just the state park that the grove is in, and then the state park is inside of a national park.
That's huge.
And you were saying, okay, it's actually 27. The grove itself is 2,700 acres.
Okay,
just that size. Yeah. So you were saying something, Adam? It's owned by the Bohemian Club, which is housed in San Francisco. I've actually been by it. The shop I used to work for did some work inside of the building. Most people know me, I'm an electrician. And they did some work inside the building, and I heard about it. I was like, oh my God, you guys worked in the Bohemian Grove? Like, no, we worked in the Bohemian Club. I'm like, oh, don't they own the Bohemian Grove? And they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. They have a racquetball course, and they have a racquetball.
So here's the weird thing. Bohemian tends to lend itself to journalists.
Yeah. Journalists, so, musicians, bohemians, you know,
From what I understand, hippies. It was basically, when it was originally founded, like we said, it was mostly, it was what would have been considered, you know, the beatniks of the time, poets and artists.
Yes.
But rich individuals basically bought them out and kept them around to entertain them and sort of, I wouldn't necessarily call it indoctrinate, but sort of welcome them into the mysteries of what they'd been doing.
That's kind of a fair assessment, yeah. The rich, they kept the jesters around to keep them, you know, amused or whatever. Yeah. And like I was saying before, a friend of mine that I worked with, his brother was a valet up there 2 years in a row, and he tells stories of seeing, you know, Phil Lesh and Glenn Frey and John Bon Jovi and George Bush Sr. and it's not just Republicans and
a Democrat.
Yes, Jimmy Carter. Thank you, Jimmy Carter. He said there's one time.
Because, do you mean America's greatest president?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ! No. Yeah. So he drives. He's the guy that parks that drives the van from where.
Well, Jimmy Carter.
No, not Jimmy Carter. My buddy. Right, this is going to be heavily edited. One more time. Let's start this over. Okay. So speaking of bohemians and musicians and whatever, the friend of mine whose brother worked at the Grove, he was a driver from the, he would take the valet bus from the parking lot where these bohemians would leave their cars and then take them up to the camp. He at one time said that a van load that consisted of George Herbert Walker Bush, Jimmy Carter, Phil Lesh, and I can't remember the other guy's name. It was another politician. But they all got out of the van, and George Bush ran to the garbage can, puked, and walked over to where the guy was going to hand him his keys to drive home. Or have him picked up. He probably I'm probably making this part up. I'm pretty sure he got picked up by a limo. I'm pretty sure George Bush hasn't driven a car in a long, long, long time.
So it's one of those things where even if you're at the Grove invited, you don't have access to your car or any means of egress. They drive you into the actual campsite.
Yes, they drive you into the campsite, you're driven out, and then you're back to the real world. Yeah, because like I said...
Well, that's not unsettling at all.
When you're a billionaire, that happens a lot. You know, you just oh, hi, how's it going, Mr. So-and-so? You get in the car and they take you wherever your next appointment is. You know, I'm pretty sure that Henry Kissinger doesn't have his exact itinerary all day long. He just sometimes shows up at places and he's like, oh, this is what I'm doing now? So, yeah. Speaking of Kissinger.
Alcohol will do that.
Right. Well, exactly. Speaking of Kissinger, he's been known to be there. There's the list of people who have been at the Bohemian Grove is everybody famous from, not just, I'm sorry, not everybody famous. This list is
well.
Ridiculous.
There's
this list
a.
Is ridiculous.
There's just
holy
well,
shit.
Let me try and put it in a little bit of perspective. So we've been talking about a lot of influential people, people in world government, people in big business. You know, which is really the two main things that keep the world turning in that sense.
Politics and
but
business.
So you know, we're talking about these sort of mundane things where it's people that are doing things that, you know, just anybody is going to be affected by it. But I think what's really interesting is that you've got a whole bunch of really like, it's not unusual for influential people to want to hang out together, right? It's not like they're going to go hang out at a local bar, right? Why would they do
right,
that, you know?
Right. Why would Ronald Reagan and Casper Weinberger hang out at the sports bar? No.
Right, exactly.
Weinberger.
So what really makes this more interesting, at least from my perspective, is the degree of occult practices that they partake in. Because it's not unusual for influential people to be secretive, but the fact that they're doing these big elaborate rituals featuring these very heavy occult symbolism. Moloch goes back to biblical
Canaanites.
And pre-biblical times.
Yep.
And it's interesting to see influential people engaged in these sort of religious practices. And I was talking to a friend of mine about this. And he put it in a very interesting perspective that I thought was very interesting. He said, you know, regular people, normal people, people who aren't really influential, they use religion and religious practices in a sense of as a shelter from the world, as a way to protect themselves, to take solace from this world that just kind of, you know, thrashes about around them, and they're sort of just at the whim of nature and the things that happen. But really, really powerful people, they don't need that. They don't need to be protected from these forces. In fact, they're the ones involved in creating these social, economic, political forces. And so for them, the religious practices that they engage in are not a way of protecting themselves, but a way of expressing their dominance and of asserting it over others. And you know, for example, the cremation of care is just one of the ways that they partake in this thing that isn't meant to protect them or defend them from something, but for them to express their power in just one other way.
So you would say that, you know, it's sort of an expression of, you know, burning a human child in effigy is them expressing the fact that that is something that they have the wealth, power, and influence to do if they.
Well, I was going to say, Hazard, that at least it's an effigy. I mean, if you look at the original Moloch sort of ceremony, essentially they would heat the kid alive inside the statue, while a nearby priest would just basically play the drum so that the parents couldn't hear the screaming.
That's kind of horrifying.
That is kind of really horrifying, actually.
Yeah.
What do you think about that perspective?
I did. In fact, you linked me to that perspective, I believe.
I'm just going through this list of, wow, there's so many people. Herbert Hoover, so many presidents.
Any presidents you're not seeing on the list?
I don't see a lot of Democrats.
It's mostly Republicans by the looks of things.
It's all Henry Kissinger. Wow. Lorenzo.
Is Obama on there?
Ernest O'Leary.
The weirdest part of the
cremation
of care, though. The weirdest part of the cremation of care.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
Is that it involves at least from the footage Alex Jones uploaded, involves a full orchestra. So it begs the question, how do you keep an orchestra quiet?
Yeah. You have a full orchestra out in the middle of the woods doing music for this occult play. And these guys are going to go home, and they're just, you know, first and second chair violinists that are going to go back to the San Francisco Orchestra, you know, next week. And
well,
play.
San Francisco is kind of fucking freaky. I bet that's not even the weirdest thing they've seen before.
You know what? You're probably right. San Francisco is pretty freaky. We could do an entire episode on the occult architecture in San Francisco.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That does sound good.
You know, there's, like, all the occult architecture in Washington, D.C., the way the city's laid out and whatever.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, yeah. The all-seeing eye on top of the monument.
And all that, yeah, all that stuff. The whole...
Without completely doxing myself, there's a nearby city / town to me called Milton Keynes, and there are a lot of theories that it's an Illuminati city. There's a lot of pyramid symbology and a lot of little symbols here and there. So,
yeah, there's a lot of cities that are like that, and San Francisco is one of them. You can just look at a map, like, you know, and look at the way the streets are laid out, and then not just that, not just the layout of the city, but the actual buildings themselves, the older ones, the 39 earthquake or whatever it was. There were a lot more. Like esoteric type buildings, but anyway.
Now here's my question: I know San Francisco has a heavy Asian and Chinese population. Do you think that? How much do you think that has to do with any arcane symbolism synergy in the design and layout? Now I know there's a lot of mysticism in Feng Shui.
In the design, there are a lot of older buildings that don't have 13th floors. That's something that I've noticed a lot. Like, jokingly, every time I go to a taller building and they say, you know, well, you're going to 23rd floor. I mean, is it the 23rd floor or is it the 22nd floor? Because this is a Chinese building. And they look at me like the elevator operator will either look at me like I'm crazy or they'll laugh. But, yeah, there's, the Chinese influence in San Francisco, I don't think was as much in the city itself, because they didn't have as much of a political influence until recently. They were more of a subculture. They kept to Chinatown a lot. So as far as the esotericism of the city, I don't think that the Asian influence and the feng shui there really plays that big of a part. And I'm not, and another thing is, don't take that as 100% accurate, because I could be 100% wrong. But
so it's going to be more of your typical Greco-Roman, you know, Hellenic, maybe a little bit of Egyptian.
Mm-hmm, a little bit of Egyptian. You've got some Malthusian things going on. With any sort of skyscrapers over a certain amount of stories, you have some Malthusian stuff going on. But yeah, the actual architecture of San Francisco, it was, like I said, it was a lot more esoteric because before the big earthquake and a lot of those buildings came down. So it's been redone, and I'm pretty sure it's been redone in a much more, modern, cultural Marxist sort of modernish looking. The buildings, it looks more like a modern city than it used to. If you look at the pictures of the old city, you could see that there was a lot of that like Washington DC sort of esotericism and like the old New York City sort of esotericism in it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, here's now, interesting, because that's always been a bit of a stickler point with me with the UK. You can go to any other country, see their major cities' architecture, and you'll say, right, this is their identity. With the UK, we've got, I suppose you could maybe count brutalism, but it's so vague and bland that it almost feels identityless. I think the closest you could say to a traditional sort of British architecture would be maybe like a red brick house.
Right.
So to get us a little bit back on track in regards to the Bohemian Grove, I think, so, you know, we've established at this point that it's a meeting of some of the most influential people in the Western, in the Western world, in the Western sphere of influence. And
they also have people from, influential people from all over the world that get invited as guests sometimes.
You know, I'm sure they have people that would come, but
it's mostly Western, United States, the West. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, you've got all these really powerful, influential people meeting in one place. Surely there's going to be some real world implications for that. And I think one of the most significant is that we can talk about now is the Manhattan Project.
Oh, definitely. I thought we were going to save that for a few minutes later, but let's get into it now.
Well, why don't we take a little bit of a musical break and a breather first?
I think that would be great.
You guys want to take a break for a second?
Yeah, it sounds good.
And for our interim piece here, we have, by one of our talented hosts, we have Spanish Rain by the Greyfield Stray.
Right on.
The restless man and the spiritual maiden. The lightning strikes and then she blinds. I float here slowly out of time. I wish that I could make you mine. Give it to me, without you I can draw no breath. Beneath the waves I show to death with that. And then she blinds. I flew here slowly out of time. I wish that I could make you mine. Give it to me, without you I can draw no breath. Beneath the waves I chill to death with the displeasure of the flesh. Give it to me. Give it to me.
We're talking about the Bohemian Grove, the deep, dark, occultic camp for the rich, the powerful, the famous, out in the woods in Northern California, where they do all those ritualistic occult things, and which apparently includes getting milkshakes. So they have a schedule for their food, apparently. And at certain times, you know, you can only get certain things at certain times. So one night recently, during the 2016 spring Camp, apparently they have two camps. They have one in the spring and one later on in the, like, later summer. This year's spring one. So Jeb Bush, the former Republican candidate for president, was there. And he asked a waitress, could he get a milkshake? And apparently you can't get milkshakes before 8 p.m. because the dessert chefs are making dessert for everybody. And Jeb Bush says, no, I really want a milkshake. And the server is like, I'm sorry, sir, I can't get you one. So he says, can I speak to your manager? And so like his presidential campaign, Bush's milkshake confrontation would end in defeat. Because the manager came by and said to him, sir, I can't get you a milkshake until after 8 p.m. And Jeb Bush says, well, do you know who I am? And the manager bends down and says, yes, I know who you are, but the milkshake rule still applies to you.
I've got this great image of him just, like, reeing.
I see the whole please clap face. Like, you know, I see the
please
face
milkshake.
Milkshake, please. You know, like, where he threw the snowball and it just, like, turned into a poof. There's literally nothing this man has done that is, like, he can't even get a milkshake in the company of the most powerful men in the world.
This is literally a place where occult rites are going on. And, you know, these kids that work here have to know that, you know, these people are doing effigy sacrifices. But still, Jeb Bush is so unimposing and cut. They're just like, no, we're not getting you a milkshake.
pretty much. Yeah.
Oh, poor Jeff. One day poor he'll Jeff. Win.
I know. Something. So he wasn't a very important or influential person, but and probably didn't do anything influential at the Bohemian Grove. But before the break, we were talking about something very important that happened. It's probably the singular most important thing that happened during the 20th century was the invention of the atomic bomb. Would anybody care to disagree with that?
Well, I'll have you know, I once had a delicious pack of tendies, and I think their invention...
20th century.
So. Oh, okay, fair enough.
Right. No, I don't think anything else in the 20th century was more important than the invention of the atomic bomb.
No.
Splitting of the atom.
It changed warfare alone forever.
It changed everything.
Let me put it in perspective real quick. So, you know, the atomic bomb, the Manhattan Project... was one of the biggest achievements in human history, and it basically started at a standard fuck party in the middle of the woods in California.
Well, hold on a second. You say standard fuck party. Well, now that's not an unsubstantiated thing, because implying a gay party. You know, you have a group of guys out in the woods doing occult things. But you also have comments from former presidents, like President Nixon, who said that at one time, he said, it's not just the ratty part of town. The upper class in San Francisco is that way. The Bohemian Grove, which I attend from time to time, it is the most faggy goddamn thing you can ever imagine with that San Francisco crowd. I can't shake hands. Wait a second. Stop it. I can't shake hands with anybody from San Francisco. The president of the United States, Richard Nixon, I am not a crook, went up into the Bohemian Grove and said, that's where those rich Republicans go out in the woods and do all that faggy shit. So, yeah.
So, it's a standard why did party. You get rid of him again? Guy seems to have his head screwed on, I got to be honest with you.
Why did we get rid of him?
Well, you know.
There was that whole thing where he deleted 30,000 he hung up on something. Like, are we talking about somebody else? Anyways.
Yeah, I think we're inside.
Yeah. So standard fuck party out in the middle of the woods, you have the most singular defining moment of the 20th century, the most important invention moment or whatever in the 20th century was the splitting of the atom, the atomic bomb.
I'd say not just 20th century. I would say given the uses, given the advances in medicine, you know, spurred forth by fissile materials, you know, even our long-range space probes, etc., the radioisotopic thermal generators, I would say the splitting of the atom was the most important moment in human history, at least until we find, you know, the next thing.
That, I would not disagree with that. Yes.
I mean, to top that, you'd need, like, faster than light or something like that.
Faster than light, or...
You need light speed or some sort of time travel device. But up until
then... self-cooking tendies, I don't know.
Oh my God.
Dreams
of a madman.
All right, so let's get back to the important thing. So this most important thing, this most important event in human history was dreamt up, created out in this grove, out in the middle of the woods, where allegedly business was not supposed to transact. However, you have what would be considered a conspiracy. And for those of you who want to say that, oh, Johnny's putting on his tinfoil right now. Would somebody like to define the word conspiracy for me, please?
Act or basically a hidden act that is disguised as something else to fool the general populace.
Well, let's be a little bit a little bit more precise here. So a conspiracy is when two or more people meet together and, you know, engage in some form of communications to plan out the commission of some act. Usually it's in a malicious or a criminal context. I think it's important to define, if we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories, what it is, and I'm glad Johnny brought that up. But yeah, conspiracy is when, you know, more than one person gets together to plan to commit a crime or some malicious act, generally speaking.
Right. So when Jamal and Tyrone say they're going to knock off a 7-Eleven, that's a conspiracy.
Yeah, they meet for 5 minutes to think about, you know, are we going to go in the back or the front door? Are we going to crash through a window and, like, stop to get a Slurpee or whatever?
Exactly. That is a conspiracy. Are there people in the woods talking about putting together an atomic bomb? That's a conspiracy. Were there people? It doesn't matter. That when people get together to discuss a means to an end, basically, that's a conspiracy.
Okay.
So you had some of the greatest minds in the world at the time coming out there, and you have scientists like Robert Oppenheimer, and.
Now, I just want to mention, Oppenheimer is a pretty big family name, isn't it?
They had a lot of clout, both political and financial, which, you know, obviously is going to be how Robert Oppenheimer managed to be able to use the Grove as the site for the meeting.
Right, right. Now, yeah, this wasn't just, these guys weren't just randomly at the Grove for one of the Bohemian Grove gatherings. These people were there specifically for this, the Manhattan Project.
Right. And it speaks a lot about the connection and influences, the fact that the people there could use the Grove specifically to talk to discuss these matters there. Because, you know, when you're planning something of this scale and magnitude, you know, you got to have the place to yourself.
Well, absolutely. That's one of the things, supposedly one of the rules of the Bohemian Grove at the gatherings is that this isn't a place...
Weaving spiders spin no webs?
Yes.
Is that the phrase?
The weaving spider, yes. Weaving spiders spin no webs. Basically, no business. And
Come not here.
Yeah. Weaving spiders, come not here. That's the one, yeah. And because this was not supposed to be a place of business. This is a place where they go out in the woods and blow off some steam and, you know, piss on some trees. But anyways, so we have Robert Oppenheimer, the Jewish scientist. We have Ernest Lawrence, who University of California, Berkeley Hall of Science is named after Dr. Lawrence. It's the Lawrence Hall of Science. You had Glenn T. Seaborg, another Jewish scientist who did all the plutonium work on the project. You have Jack Parsons, who founded the Jet Propulsion Labs. And also was one of the founding members of NASA, was he not?
Yeah, NASA really evolved out of the JPL.
Right. And he was given government money to do his experiments, and he would also do weird things out in the desert at night with his girlfriend and some of his friends.
Now wait a minute. What do you mean by weird things?
Well, like sex magic rituals and that kind of stuff.
So hold on. So you're telling me is that you have a whole bunch of big name scientists there, mm-hmm. but some of them are trying to perform magic in their spare time?
Yes, that's exactly what
I'm talking about. Was anybody else weird at this meeting?
Well, yeah, there was. There were two other weird ones. There was a guy who was known at the time as Freighter X. Freighter H. And the H stood for Hubbard. His name was L. Ron Hubbard. You may have heard of him.
Yes, no. He went on to become a very successful science fiction writer, but he did serve in the Navy during World War II, mm-hmm. before this meeting, before his discharge. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, he went on to move into Jack Parsons' mansion with him and eventually steal his girlfriend away from him. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is right. L. Ron Hubbard did cuck a motherfucker.
He did.
Now, L. Ron Hubbard, he did something else pretty important too, didn't he?
Yeah.
He wrote Dianetics, and he founded the cult of Scientology. Church.
The Church of Scientology, which is based on the theory that Xenu created the universe out of a nuclear explosion billions of years ago. So he's been talking about nuclear stuff his whole career. And then also you had everybody's favorite occultist, Aleister Crowley.
The sex, drugs, and rock and roll, the guy of the magic world.
That's right. So like you were saying, Adam, you have very high level scientists, and you have occultists all in the same place doing one specific thing, and that was to create the first nuclear weapon.
I think it should be emphasized that these weren't just people who all happened to be frequent Bohemian Grove attendees. Now, they were all together at the same time for the same meeting.
Right. Yeah, this was definitely a scheduled meeting, invite only type thing. And there's someone said that when L. Ron Hubbard, when they split the atom, L. Ron Hubbard ripped a hole in the space-time continuum and pulled a demon through. And that's how the whole nuclear fission was born, basically.
Demonic well, I mean, power. In a sense, a demon was definitely fucking unleashed upon the world. I mean, you could ask the people of Nagasaki and Hiroshima what happened, and I'm pretty sure they'd think it was a fucking demon.
Yeah, that was pretty powerful explosions. So you have these scientists, you have these occultists, and they're coming together to create a project for the U.S. government. And it just goes to tell you what kind of people we have working for our government at times.
So not only is this one of the greatest scientific breakthroughs in human history, so not only did that happen, and not only did the meeting which started the genesis of this whole project take place at basically just a big party for rich people to do silly stuff in the woods.
Well, but this the part where they conduct sacrifices to old gods, you know.
Yeah, but not only that, but this was a very specific kind of science that nuclear power and nuclear reactions fundamentally change the nature of the materials that are involved in that.
It's alchemy.
It is the manifestation and final fucking realization of the alchemist's age old goal, that of the transmutation of substances. You know, when you have a fission reaction, you have the splitting of atoms. they split until they reach a stable configuration. It's literal transmutation.
Right. Yeah. Materials. I mean, I don't know how expensive or how effective it would be, but you know, I guess theoretically you could turn lead into gold with this with these reactions. Is that not inaccurate?
It's doable, but the thing is, it's not cost effective, because the thing is, in order to do it, you have to expend so much energy, because both lead and gold are already in fairly stable configurations. So in order to get them into different configurations, it takes a lot more energy than splitting an already unstable atom.
Okay.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. But wasn't that basically every king's wish, was for the wizard to turn substances into gold back in the day?
Pretty much. Yeah. The alchemists themselves didn't really fucking care about it.
Right.
Except as, you know, a means to an end. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have... So now we have the Manhattan Project. We have the occultists, we have the scientists out in the woods doing this, putting together this thing so that they could create basically, like you're saying, nuclear fission. Now, what is exact nuclear fission? Is when you split the atom. What's the fusion? Is the other end of it, right?
Yes. What nuclear fission is you have unstable particles. Radioactive material. What that basically means is that the atomic configuration is not completely stable. You will have neutrons that fly off. You know the term half-life, correct?
Yes.
Half-life refers to any substance that is in an unstable atomic configuration. A half-life is the amount of time required for half of that substance to break down, to lose something and no longer be in a stable configuration. What happens when you have a nuclear fission reaction is inside of a controlled reaction, you have a lot of unstable material inside of a very small space. So when they're losing their neutrons, when they're, you know, you have a release of both neutrons and you have energy in the form of radiation, your X-ray spectrum, your gammas, etc. Now, what happens to that energy is it starts to affect the atoms around, jostling their already unstable bonds. They fission, they split, and it just goes on an exponential scale. Fusion's right. The opposite end of the spectrum. Fusion is when you're basically smashing atoms into one another to create new configurations.
Okay, so fission is the particles break apart, and fusion is they come together.
Yes.
And both of those generate a lot of energy, right?
Yes.
Okay. Which is the more powerful of the two?
Fission.
Fission? Okay.
People talk about, you hear about fusion bombs, but really what that is it's basically a two-stage nuke where you're first initiating nuclear fusion to get more volatile and unstable isotopes, which will then undergo fission and produce more energy that way.
Oh, so fission has like a starting cost.
Not necessarily, but fusion bombs just... You use a fusion reaction beforehand to get more fissile material to work with.
Okay.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. But all of this would be considered alchemy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Any and all of it is fucking transmutation.
Right. And so, basically, what's the line about magic to the unlearned or whatever?
Arthur C. Clarke, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic to the uninitiated.
Right. So basically, they could have been doing this, you know, years and years and years ago, and it would just be magic then. They wouldn't have called it nuclear fission or nuclear fusion.
Yeah, I mean, well, fucking, there. If you look back through history, you know, there's plenty of historical information and context about nuclear materials. You know, if you look back through historical records, you can find people talking about cursed fucking rocks that were, you know, warm to the touch, and anybody that fucked with them or went in that area got sick and fucking died. Granted, we now know that
those are probably,
you know,
radioactive materials.
Yeah, but back then, that was fucking magic.
Right.
Those were cursed fucking rocks.
Right. Interesting.
Well,
that was, yeah, so that was a basic intro to fission and fusion, guys. Thanks, Hazard. Appreciate that, because I don't know much about that part of it. I just know that there was some guys up in the woods doing some spoopy shit.
It's one of those things where once you understand the principles, nuclear physics isn't as complicated as people would make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
There was a research study done after, I think it was in 1955 or 1960. It was right when the Cold War was starting to take off. But the U.S. government was deciding what would be a more effective plan to keep other nations from developing their own nuclear weapons. There were two schools of thought. One was that you either controlled the supply of information, how to make a bomb, or B, you controlled the supply of fissile materials. So originally people wanted to just keep the secret, just keep the information secret, but there were some doubters. And they basically tracked down two very bright individuals who knew nothing about nuclear physics and basically said, you know, we want you to take what you know, basically take a look at the information that's already public record about everything, you know, what's already out there, and see if you can't figure out how we made the nukes. And they were able to work it out within closely enough to where it was decided that instead of trying to keep that information secret, although it was still kept secret, they focused more on controlling the supply of fissile materials.
Interesting. And who are these people?
Fuck.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
I do not remember that off the top of my head.
But yeah, so
we can.
So basically we have a very top secret government project going on, is what this is.
Right. Again, at the Bohemian Grove, at this place where all the most powerful people in the world gather.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of that, you may find, you know, some of our audience may find a lot of the occult stuff, because, you know, there's so many different things we can talk about. Like, Hazard just gave us a great background about some of the Cold War secretive operations that were going on regarding nuclear technology. But, you know, some people really aren't on board with the occult or the mystical, things like that. But what I think is important to understand is that even if you don't believe in occultism or mysticism, the fact of the matter is that the most powerful people in the world do, and they take it very seriously.
Even those don't necessarily explicitly believe still have enough of a gut feeling about it to at least bend the knee and pay obeisance to it.
Exactly. So I would just say, to anybody listening, even if you don't believe it or think it's just bullshit, you should pay attention anyway, because some pretty dang important people are paying attention too.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, you've got you've got some of the top scientists in the world, and one of which, Jack Parsons, was an occultist who was a
member of Crowley's OTO.
Yes,
you know,
member of the OTO, and Crowley was even there. I mean, this is the biggest occultist ever. You know, he invented basically, you know, the rock and roll generation. Do what thou wilt be the whole of the law. Basically, you know, do what feels good, and you know, and then sex magic parties, and that's what Parsons and Frater H or L. Ron Hubbard were doing out in the desert, being funded by the U.S. government.
Evidently, there were times when L. Ron Hubbard would begin I believe the exact terminology used was something like manipulating his wand, which literally he would masturbate while fucking and ramble on while fucking Jack Parsons would write down whatever he said.
Right. Yeah. No, the sex magic things, I mean, these are documented in Parsons' biography. And then you've got, you know, they were both members of the Thelemic Society. And, you know, and these guys invented the nuclear bomb, you know, and they were doing sex magic rituals in the desert with, you know, a guy who's known for summoning demons and talking to other, you know, other dimensional creatures. You know, and these are people who founded NASA and also Scientology.
Really makes you wonder if they didn't leave something behind on the moon.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other episode. The moon? Are you kidding me? Yeah, there's so much stuff
to
talk about.
I suppose we didn't really go to the moon either.
That's a book, yeah. I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Yeah. That's more tinfoil than occult, but yeah. Man, I mean, like, it's...
Well, you can't... I'm sorry. The moon isn't one of those... The moon's one of those provable things. I mean, they still have the mirror relay set up. If you actually have a properly pulsed laser, you can still bounce a fucking signal off the relay station they left on the moon and time it.
All something that could be left there via non-human landings, too. So there's that theory behind that. Like I said, this is a whole other episode. We're talking about the Bohemian Grove. let's not start episode 7 just yet, okay? So
right. Really, we're not going to do the moon as, you know, episode 13 for Apollo 13.
Oh, there we go. There,
and you know have... what? I'm calling it. I'm setting it in stone right now. Episode 13, moon shit.
Setting it in moon rock.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yes.
Sounds great.
What is this? Having been a long-term user of alcohol and marijuana, Parsons now habitually use cocaine, amphetamines, peyote, mescaline, and opiates. Holy shnike.
What is a gateway drug, see?
Yeah. Wow, it's, yeah, Crowley and Gurn. Yeah, he hung out a lot with Aleister Crowley. Interesting, man. It's crazy. This is a guy that founded NASA, basically, you know? There's so much, like, we could probably do a whole episode on Jack Parsons and his weird OTO voodoo and witchcraft stuff.
Yeah, we probably could, but...
But we're not gonna, not right now.
So, well, we sure have covered a lot regarding the Bohemian Grove. I mean, the origins of it, what kind of people are there, and just the sheer diversity of the types of people that are there.
Mm-hmm.
They were all white, though.
Well, yeah.
White.
Yes, they were either white or white. Yeah, you know, depending on if you know what we're talking about. but yeah, there's... it's crazy. And apparently they have a very strict dessert policy out there, too. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, even if Jeb Bush wasn't able to get his milkshake, at least there was a cuck shed there to comfort him.
This is true. He's used to getting cucked.
I mean, Jack Parsons, I think, is a good enough guy that he'd leave his cuck shed behind for future generations.
Right on. Oh, man. Well, we did lose Grayfield about a few minutes ago, apparently. He had, you know, real Brit Bong hours, apparently, and had to go to sleep. But he'll be back. And we're going to be back eventually, for another episode. And you guys got anything you want to close out with tonight?
No, I'm pretty satisfied.
Nice. Hazard?
Good ep, guys. Good ep. Yeah. You know, it went smooth. It almost feels like we've done this before.
Weird, huh. Right? Kind of like a deja vu, sort of a... We are going to get out of here, I guess. And we will talk to you guys again... very soon.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's send you off on your ways with another exciting creepypasta by death.
All right. Later, guys.
See you later.
Some people consider 3 a.m. to be the spirit's time to communicate with us. Others think it's the devil's mark. Some even think that when you wake up at this time, someone is watching you. But if someone were watching you, how would they watch you if there were no windows or doors in the room you were in? There are many superstitions for what 3 a.m. could be. I'm going to tell you the real meaning of this worldwide time myth. While you sleep soundly, you dream. While you dream, you are unaware of your surroundings. Unaware of what could be lurking in the closet, under your bed, beside you in your own covers. Your eyes flutter open and you check the time on either your watch, cell phone, alarm clock, or simply whatever you have lying around that has the time displayed on it. But knowing the time doesn't really matter, right? You rub your eyes and blink a few times, adjusting to the darkness of your room. You hear the sounds of floorboards creaking, the sound of pitter-patter along the ground. I'm sure it's just a mouse, you think to yourself. Maybe it is just a mouse. Or a large rat. A very large rat indeed to be making such loud footsteps. You dare not look over the edge of your bed, for you are paralyzed in your fear. You're just scaring yourself. Enough already with this foolishness, you tell yourself. But is it foolishness? Or is there a reason to be scared? Are there monsters under the bed, waiting to snatch your feet and pull you under the bed when you get up in the middle of the night to use the restroom or get a drink of water? You do not believe in monsters. Those were stories that your mother or father told you years ago as a child. The Boogeyman, Sandman, and other monster stories were just stories to give you a spook, right? Yeah, right. Monsters aren't real. You think and chuckle at your childish fears, but wait. What was that? That pitter of feet seemed to be getting closer. You squeeze your eyes tightly shut as you hear the long, loud screech of your door creaking open ever so slowly. Was that a giggle you just heard? No, of course not. Mice don't giggle. Neither do rats. You're being delusional. You open your eyes slowly and stare at your ceiling. There is movement under your covers. The covers that you stay under to provide you with warmth and comfort. It's moving towards you slowly, in a crooked fashion. It looks as if it's limping beneath the blankets. You are frozen in terror, afraid to move or else you might just give away your location. You feel something tugging at the loose clothes that you wear. Oh Jesus, what is that? You yank away the covers and throw them to the ground and gasp at what you see. The creature is lopsided, grotesque in a way that makes your stomach turn in knots. It wears torn fabric that looks like it is hundreds of years old. It tilts its head to the right and gives you a crooked smile. Its dark eyes without pupils stare at you, unblinking. You slowly begin to push yourself up into a sitting position, backing away from the creature. This doesn't seem to bother it, though. It simply limps closer and closer until it has reached your leg. It pulls itself onto you and begins to crawl, slowly. Oh, so slowly. It bears that crooked, toothy grin. Its gray skin hangs from its bony body. It smells horrid, a smell you've not come to face before, but you know this smell, even without having smelled it before. It's the smell of rot, but not like any rot. The stingy scent of rot, flesh and blood. What are you going to do? You think, and lick your lips, eyes wide, not removing them once from the creature. It's still inching its way up to your body, closer, closer and closer to your face, with each limping step. You take in a deep breath through your nose, and then release a scream so loud, you think you've popped your own eardrums. The creature suddenly jerks its head toward the door, and lets out a murderous cry. It quickly limps to the edge of the bed and jumps, landing to the floor with a thump. It rushes out the door and disappears into the dark of the hallway. You see, 3 a.m. is when the little things come out to play. When the little things decide it's your lucky day. When the little things show themselves. But don't let this deceive you. The first time you see them is almost certainly the last. You're lucky if you can get away safely. I cannot tell you how to deal with the little things, for they are everywhere. In every home, every hole, nook, and cranny your house has. How many you have in your home is not a question answered easily. All I can tell you is that there are many. They study you, and they plan your demise. No wonder they reek of death.